Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. Now, I've decided that I want to play us in this episode on this fine Sunday morning with my new unofficial anthem of lockdown. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
This is Playboy Bunny by James Kennedy and Lala Kent, everyone. I'm a playboy bunny making big boy moves. I got that yummy in my tummy, Italiano good food. How about you? You got moves. You want a drug and drink, so drive in that liquor by your side. This beat go hella dummy, and I think that's cool. These people wanna party, and I think that's cool. I'm so blessed, yeah, I'm so lucky. Better play your moves. You can't stop me, I'm so cocky. I don't play by the rules.
I got it.
What do you think?
Oh, no.
I love it.
Oh, my goodness. It's just gibberish. Am I wrong? Is it just words strung together?
It's absolute, just pure unadulterated madness.
Oh, I can't even explain how much joy that brought me.
I really need to find the lyrics. I don't think they have the lyrics available anywhere online.
Oh my god.
Which is quite funny. There's something about all these girls out with their titties swapping different cities. It's pretty wild.
Is this the one they were recording on the show?
No, so I think is that the one where she's singing about solo cups?
Yeah.
No, that's, I think that's called Ride or Riding. Right.
Okay.
Ride With Me. Ride with me, because I've actually ended up downloading most of his discography now.
I'm so happy about this. On Spotify, I might need to listen to it for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I have Apple Music, but they also have an album called Pump Sessions.
Oh.
From 2016, which is amazing. I can also recommend Get Loose, the single, and Top Man, the single.
Wow. He is on Spotify.
Yeah, he's a fully fledged artist.
Wow. Oh, yep, yeah, there's his full discography. And yep, you know, right as well.
I also love how appalling the album artwork is. So if you look at the album artwork for Playboy Bunny, he looks like some sort of, it's very pale. It's very strange.
It's so bizarre. What is that green hat he's wearing?
I don't know. And the thing is, I don't know if it's ironic. I don't actually think it is, because it's not quite been pushed to the extreme of being like a parody of itself.
No, exactly. It's not that committed to it where it looks spoofy. It looks very like he's intended that.
Yeah, I think he's serious. And then also, you know how we were talking about solo cups and how people at my school used to like fly them in from America to get that college party vibe? I was sitting the other day, I've got a big window in my living room. It's like my source of light. And I was sitting on my sofa and I was just kind of looking out at the foliage and it was just like a red solo cup. It's just like lodged in the tree here in the shrubbery. And in my mind, I was just like, wow, nature is healing. We are the virus.
Oh, so
which
deep.
Is also one of my favorite memes of the lockdown.
Incredible. Just so, so incredible.
So what have you been up to?
So I had a minor baking disaster in that I was trying to be incredibly smug because I did an Instagram takeover with a magazine that I worked with. And I was like, oh, I know, we make really good pizza dough from scratch. Let me make this. Like, I'd written the recipe up as an article the other week as well. So I was like, oh, it'd be really fun to like show everybody how to make it and how it turns out. And when we'd gone to do our Asda shop last week, it's almost always out of bread flour. And there was like one solitary bag of bread flour left. So we just grabbed it and bought it. And we'd like decanted it into like a mason jar and then thrown the packaging away. And then when we were trying to make the dough with it, Greg was like, it's not how it usually is. Like, usually it goes like really elasticy.
Yeah.
And it had the exact sort of texture of like plaster of Paris.
No.
And it was like stark white, and usually it's kind of like a beige color. And we were like, maybe it's just a different kind of flower. Like the flower itself felt really weird. Like, you know what? It feels like squeaky.
Yeah, we just look, like, I didn't bake, but
yeah,
it sounds particularly like it's going in the right direction.
We were like, we'll put it into, like, you have to leave it to prove. We were like, we'll leave it to prove and just see how it happens, how it turns out. So we got it out after it proved and everything, and we looked at it and we were like, that's not going to make pizza, because Greg tried to roll it out and it was like Play-Doh. So as soon as you tried to stretch it, it just splintered into pieces. So we were like, that's weird. Maybe we could just make bread with it. I mean, it is just bread, flour, yeast and water. We'll make a bread loaf instead and just see how that turns out. So we put it in the oven. And in the meantime, Greg Googled the flour that we brought, and turns out that it was like gluten-free. So I don't know why that made a difference, because obviously I've had gluten-free pizzas before and stuff, and they've been fine and completely normal.
So there must be something that they add to it.
Yeah, because this just went so awry, and when we took it out of the oven, it literally just looked like we put like expanding foam or polyfiller into the bread tin.
I did actually die when I saw that final story, because it was literally like the color of chalk.
And honestly, it was like a breeze block, like you could have put somebody's windows through with it. It was so solid, you couldn't even like stick your thumb in the, like, if we sawed it in half, and you can't even like stick your thumb in like the center bit of it.
Really dense.
We thought, oh, it might taste better than it looked, and as soon as you put it in your mouth, it takes on the exact taste and texture of soil. So that went in the bin, and we ordered £40 worth of pizza, because the place we usually get it from was closed.
Oh, where'd you order from?
So we ended up having to get it from the same place that poisoned us last week.
No.
Yep. Yep.
Get it, Pizza Punks.
I know, we should have. We just panicked and we were like, we just need pizza now. Luckily it was fine this week, but yeah, it was just not the lovely calming Friday I'd envisioned for myself.
Yeah, and I love that because you were being held accountable via the Instagram takeover, like, of course something was going to go wrong that you'd have to, like, come clean about on the story.
I couldn't just kind of quietly put it in the bin and sort of move on from it. It was like I had to explain why we were no longer making pizza. And just as I was signing off in the evening, so my lasting memory with everybody that watched it was just me being an absolute disaster in the kitchen.
Yeah, you got dough shamed.
Yeah. Oh god.
Anyway, the good thing is we had Roni to look forward to all this time.
And it made everything so much better to get up on Saturday and be able to watch this.
Yeah, this was really good. This episode seemed to go faster than the others. I think maybe because it was centered around like Fashion Week. They always have a Fashion Week episode.
Yeah, I thought this as well, like when it finished and it was just like, oh, like coming on next week, and I was just like, sorry, what, is it over already? Like I was like waiting for another at least half an episode.
Yeah, I think I do still like it more when they're just like thrown into a home environment and just left to their own devices.
I do as well, because I feel like it sort of condenses all of their crazy into one small space, and it just makes it come out so much better,
bounces off the walls.
Yeah.
So we open up at New York Fashion Week. It's the preliminary sort of planning for the Sonia by Sonia Morgan fashion show. Sonia then gives a very convoluted timeline of her fashion brand's sort of success. Well, we started in 2010 and then we did Fashion Week in 2012. And then now we're coming back for Fashion Week 2019.
Yeah.
Like that made so much logical sense.
Yeah, like what happened in those great big empty chunks of space between those fashion weeks?
Toaster ovens.
Yeah. Toaster ovens and lifestyle brands.
Lifestyle brands. And so there's just like a real kind of melange of people milling around. And at one point, one of the interns holds up this like, it looks like a prom dress that you'd order from Sheinside or from like Wish.
Yeah.
You know, where the mesh is just like the sequin is not as detailed as you thought it would be. And it's just kind of like a weird shape. And she just goes, oh my God, that's so Tyra Banks. I was like, is it?
Is it really? Is that your opinion of Tyra Banks? And I love out of all the celebrities and all the models and all the people she could have picked, she went with Tyra Banks.
Yeah, it felt very 07.
Yeah, which kind of just speaks metaphorically of pretty much all of the designs that Sonia sent down that runway.
Yeah, although we'll get there. And then we cut to Tinsley, and Tinsley's hanging out with Garrow Sparrow from Project Runway in her flat.
Yes. So I watched the series of Project Runway that he was on, and I actually loved him on that. And I love a lot of his designs because he does a lot of stuff for like the LGBTQ community and like drag queens and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So all of his work is very kind of like the antithesis of Tinsley, really.
Yeah, I watched that season as well. I actually watched it with this guy that I was like kind of casually hooking up with, and I got him into Project Runway. I don't know how it happened.
Incredible.
But yeah, so we watched that season. I think it was over the summer.
Yeah, I think it was.
And I do like Project Runway, like as a show.
It's like one of my favorite like little like secret pleasures to binge watch. And it is one of the few I've managed to get Greg into as well. But in his very cynical way, he's like, well, at least this one, they're actually making something and doing something useful.
Yeah, I mean, I think that because it like charts the creative process, like I can see why he would understand that. And
yeah, I think he can identify much more with that than pretty much anything else that I try and force him to watch.
So she's losing her mind over this crown that he's got in the bag that he's bought. And she reveals that she's going to be closing the runway for him this year.
Yes. And I mean, I love it for Tinsley, but of course she loves the crown.
Yeah, okay, when she comes out in the dress, what did you think of it?
Oh, well, like I say, considering I know what a lot of his designs look like and that sort of thing, it didn't do it for me at all.
Okay, I'm glad you agree, because I also was left pretty speechless. I think it was kind of like what you were saying the other week, when something just doesn't quite sit right or come out right in terms of structure of garment, just to be like, it's avant-garde.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think as well, what annoyed me was the fabric itself looked very cheap. Like the tulle looked cheap with the colours, and it was like this glittery metallic fabric that just didn't have a premium feel to it at all.
Yeah, and it wasn't like flamboyant enough to kind of get away with being that kind of like kitschy, slightly tacky camp kind of vibe that you can kind of pull off with a cheaper fabric.
Yeah.
It, like trying to be really avant-garde and like luxe, but using really naff fabric.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of an odd choice, and I thought it was a strange choice for closing up the runway, because after, when you actually see some of the looks, they were a lot better. What other people were wearing?
So I totally agree, and like obviously the look that he put her in was a different one. Excuse me. But even so, I didn't think they were like show-stopping finale looks. I felt like they were kind of middle of the show towards the end kind of vibe, where it was like you're starting to build up to this like incredible gown or finisher look.
Yeah,
but they definitely didn't feel closing to me.
Yeah, no, it was a weird one.
It was very strange.
And then Luann is having dinner with her musical theater producer. She's wearing a white pinstripe blazer. She just always looks so chic. I know I'm constantly going on about how good Luann looks,
but it is that like effortless, elegant kind of like classic look, and like you say, like she's got it down to a fine art.
Yeah, she's the opposite of try hard, and I think that's why I really like her on Roni, because I think Tinsley, Sonia, Ramona are try hard with their fashion.
Absolutely. And like they're trying to seem really young and sexy and fresh, whereas Luann's just like aware of her age and sort of dresses in a way that makes her look younger and chicer and fresher than any of the rest of them trying to.
Yeah, completely agree. She tells us that her new cabaret show is going to be called Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Which I love for her.
So in honour of that, I've come up with three Fuck, Marry, Kills of my own to ask you.
Oh my God, right.
Okay, you ready? Okay, so Fuck, Marry, Kill, Ramona, Alexis, Bellino and Nini.
Oh, oh God, I think I'd have to marry Ramona just because I think she'd be a fantastic husband.
Explain, show you're working.
Well, I'm still debating between the other two which one I'd rather. probably fuck Nini, but only because she used to be funny.
Yeah, okay.
And then probably kill Alexis, but only just because I think she's so forgettable that I'd probably not feel too bad about it. Oh, like, I was doing a disservice to the history of the housewives.
She's so sanctimonious as well.
Yeah, I just couldn't. I couldn't get away with it. I feel out of the three of them, I think Ramona is the lesser of three evils. And yeah, like I say, I think she'd make a fantastic husband.
Yeah, so why do you think that?
I just think she's got such like a sort of that rich man energy. Do you know what I mean? In that kind of like in that insane manic way that she does, where she's always like switched on and running and going and doing things. And I just get the sense that I could just be quite happy just being a housewife with her.
Fair one. Okay, fuck, marry, kill. Brooks, Jim Bellino, Mark Daly.
Oh, great. Kill Brooks just before we even get into anything. Who would give it to?
Jim Bellino. Alexis's husband, who believes that women's place is in the home. Daly, who is just... I mean, this last season of Atlanta.
Oh, no, I didn't watch the last season. Shivers
down my spine. I think it's his really soft voice.
Oh, God. Oh, I can't make this choice. Oh.
I think I would marry Mark Daly just because at the end of the day, like, at least he's good looking.
Yeah, and at least I suppose you'd have the freedom in a sense. Although it would be creepy and probably held against you. At least it wouldn't be in that sort of hideous way that Alexis's husband was.
Yeah, I mean, I would fuck Jim Bellino just to say I once fucked someone that had a trampoline park. Like, that would be good enough for me just as an anecdote.
Yeah. Do it for the story.
Yeah, always.
But yeah, Brooks was a no-brainer.
Okay.
Brooks is always kill.
Right, last one. You ready?
Oh, God. I don't think I am.
Okay, fuck, marry, kill. Tinsley's bangs, Sheena's nails, or Brett's collarless shirt?
Oh, no.
We operate in metaphors here.
Oh, my God. Oh. I think I'd have to marry Sheena's nails.
Okay, yeah, because they have their own energy.
They do, and they're very on brand, so I feel like I can't demonize them too much. Tinsley's bangs are so criminal, though. but I just couldn't. I couldn't with Brett, so we're going to kill Brett's T-shirts.
Okay.
And go with Tinsley's bangs. Fuck.
Fuck Tinsley's bangs. That's fair. I can respect that thought process. Yes.
What would be your choice for that one?
Yeah, so I think marry Sheena's nails. Fucked it. Yeah, I think the same.
Yeah, okay. It seems like the logical working.
There's something about the collarless shirt that just makes him look a bit like either an extra from Star Trek or like a cult leader or something.
I just can't get away with like a granddad collar on really anybody.
Is that what it's called, a granddad collar?
Yeah, I think so. When they've kind of just got like that, they don't have like a fold over it all. It's just that weird little thin band at the top that looks like it could hold like a Vickers thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any shirts like that.
No, I just think they don't look flattering on really anybody.
So Ramona's working out her tummy area. Like, this is my problem area. And she has to go to some fashion shows or she'll be considered a New York City kind of social pariah. I think she actually says leper.
I think she does as well. Oh, you know Ramona was itching to do this scene for God knows how long.
Yeah, she's just lying on her very ugly, I think, carpet.
Yeah, I mean, Ramona's apartment's never been like the epicenter of taste, but that seems like a particular deviation for her.
It was it was 50 Shades of Grey. That's all it was. There was no humor anywhere. And so we get this slightly unsettling montage of her lying on the carpet, making these little like moany panting noises.
You know, she thought she was the sexiest thing that's ever happened to this planet as she was performing that.
Have you ever heard a turtle making love?
Oh my god, yeah.
That's what it reminded me of.
That and the kind of trapped on their back sort of. Oh my god, I also love that they shot it like close up to her face for the most part. So for all we know, she was literally just lying like a plank on the floor and then occasionally flailing her legs. Like.
Flipping back to Sonia now, we see that Sonia's saying the demographic for her brand is 25 to 45, which is broad.
I think it's very broad. And I think it's fine to have a bigger age gap, but I think you can't have everything cater for everybody in that age gap. Like, if she'd have had, like, a sort of fluid collection that was, like, some of the dresses for the 45-year-olds, and then she'd made something younger and cooler for, like, the kind of younger demographic, it would have been okay. But I also think 25 to 45, like, the start and end point of that, people are at very different points of their life.
Well, that's why normally when you're talking about demographics, it's 25 to 34, isn't it? And then it's 34 to... Yeah. 50,
yeah, I think so, or even 45 occasionally.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that 20-year span is...
I mean, she probably hasn't changed how she dresses, but...
Oh, absolutely not. You know, she dressed like that way back when she was, like, in her very early 20s at least, and she's just never gotten over it.
In her heyday.
Yeah. But I also just love that this entire scene just made me realise that Sonia has absolutely no grip on what the hell is happening in her fashion show.
Oh no, she has no idea what she's doing. She does at least make a distinction between the Sonia Morgan collection New York and this, which is apparently ready to wear. And she says that she's been working all summer on it, which I assume means she meant to one trade fair and okayed the design she liked and then basically waited for them to get shipped from China.
That's all I can think of as well, because there is no way in hell that she had anything to do with the actual design process of this.
No, and like, that's fine, but just don't pretend to be a designer. Just know you're a celebrity with a spin-off brand. You know, it's kind of like when Ramona says later, well, she's just selling merchandise, and that's fine. You still have to kind of make it desirable and build a brand around it, but you're not sitting drawing all summer, you know?
Yeah. And you're not making fabric choices and design alterations and that sort of thing.
And then Sonia has this ragtag bunch of brand managers clustered around a table. And there was some serious cuffing happening on one of the table. Did you catch this?
No.
Oh, God. One of the guys had, like, this massive silver cuff with a big turquoise stone, but it was so big that it almost looks like in sci-fi, you know, when they have, like, a big screen built into a metal forearm. Just like a sci-fi moment.
Oh, incredible. Absolutely incredible. I can't believe I missed that.
She seems to have a person for every single job.
Yeah, there's no one encompassing person or no head of anything. She just seems to have, like, broken down every single job into a series of stages and applied them to each individual person.
Yeah, so at least Tracy with Beverly Hills with the pink hair seemed to have, like, most of it covered.
Yeah, she had a better hand on things.
Sonia literally has an independent person just for scouting her location.
Yeah.
And presumably, once the location had been decided, I don't see why the location scout is still attending these meetings. So I have to say, as someone with a fashion business myself, as someone who has been dipping her toe into design for the past year, I am very worried about the financials of this business.
I'd have loved to have seen the inner workings of everything that went up to this show.
Yeah, I want the business plan. I want spreadsheets.
I want the branding analysis. I want all of the data. I want everything.
I would love to also see her, like, interviewing people.
Yeah.
To hire.
Yeah, I'd love to see how she landed on this, like, motley crew of basically incompetent people. Because not one of those men had any idea what they were doing, what their role really was. it was essentially just a glorified one of her parties where she just sort of invites everybody she's ever vaguely acquainted with and then just flits between them.
Well, this is why this is where I actually think these people got recruited. I think she just had a party on a Wednesday, you know, and then I think she just kind of, the people that lasted the longest, the last men standing, she drew them into this discussion at the end as they're starting to kind of sober up, but they're still kind of bleary-headed from all the drinking, they haven't slept, and she gets them all hyped up about this business, and then that's kind of how things happened.
You also know she definitely made this party a midweek thing because she just wanted to see who didn't have anywhere to be the next day, and she was like, you're fine, you're free, let's go with that.
They probably don't have to pay you.
Yeah.
So at this point we cut to Tinsley's getting to the Garrow Sparrow fashion show, and she literally crawls out of the back of a limousine like the Exorcist with a silver tiara. So this is also something that I wanted your take on, because you said that, you know, she's like obsessing over the crown. Where do you think this like princess complex stems from?
I think it's from, I'm sure she used to do like pageants and things, didn't she? So I think it's from this, like, obviously I know she used to be like a socialite. I think she had pageants, and I think Dale has always just instilled on her that she needs to be this like princessy queen of the universe. If you've got a crown, then you're winning sort of vibe. And I think that's where that comes from.
I just think it's so like infantilized, and it's naive. And I think that's what I love about it, as like a recurring motif in Romy, is that it's just so dark in its own way. It's like a fully grown woman who is, you know, wanting to become a mother, who really the only time she seems to be happy is when she's playing princess.
Yes, like when she did the circus thing and she got to put on the big dress and the sort of the makeup and the got to be like the center of the stage sort of thing and do all that, and then just immediately had a breakdown after it was over. And it was very much the same thing like when she was talking to Dale and they were both crying because she was back doing this stuff. And it's like, you could have always been doing something that was just as much like power or sort of success or something. It didn't need to be putting on a pretty dress. And I find it weird that that's kind of their, both of their kind of like, oh, I'm so proud of you back doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's also what annoys me about it on some level, is that she's not really performing when she's doing this. So with Luann, I can understand the confidence boost a lot more, because okay, she can't sing, but you know, she's putting on a show and she's doing, you know, back and forth with the audience, and there's choreography and there's things like that. Whereas with Tinsley, it's basically just dressing up and sort of parading around.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no depth or substance to it. And it's like, it was quite like interesting, because obviously a lot of the other women said as well, like, oh, it's nice seeing her like looking like herself again, and like she obviously seems like herself again. And it's like, it's so weird that everybody thinks Tinsley's the most herself when she's just doing this like nothingy, like nothing to do with her personality and all to do with her looks.
Yeah.
Which I find very odd. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like, obviously I love models and I think modeling is such a hard job. But for Tinsley, it's not like she's like a model. She's somebody famous who happens to be sample size and popular and blonde, and therefore they're like, oh well, you know, get socialite in here kind of thing. But she sort of treats it like it's the biggest thing she's ever accomplished.
Yeah, and I think this goes back to our discussion that we had the other day, where it's like, if money was no object, if I had all the time in the world, just to think of all of the things that I would do for myself.
Yeah, like all the traveling culture and all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and where, and this, it reminds me, there's this theory in fashion, or this hypothesis about, you know, like how dressing like a schoolgirl or dressing as like a younger person or a Lolita in Japan is really popular.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's this theory, and it's a bit far-reaching, but then part of me thinks it does make some sort of sense. So there's this theory that says that because Japan was very collectively traumatized as a society from World War II and what happened with the bombs, that childhood is seen as like a state where nothing can hurt you, and it's like a very naive and like wonderful and idyllic state of being.
Oh, okay.
So kind of in the popular conscience, even if it's sort of underlying, and so that's why it's kind of seen as a way to avoid like the scary and dark things about being an adult. And I see some of that in Tinsley of like, I'm just going to be this princess and, you know, parade around on stage and, you know, it's showtime, because that's escapism and it's an idealized kind of state of being.
Yeah, I think that's completely true. And it is that thing of like, if she doesn't have to pretend to be an adult for a while, that she doesn't have to think about the fact that she's alone and she doesn't have kids and all these other things that she puts in such high standing that she's not accomplishing. And she gets to just be this like almost like little girl in a dress again, that's like performing for her parents and getting their like validation and attention.
Yeah.
It's like you can totally imagine her being that kid like that was like putting on little shows in the bedroom and like making her mum dress her up in her heels and that sort of thing. Is that like weird reversion back to it?
Yeah, I completely agree. So Dale has actually come to support Tinsley, and she's in a true power pussy bow Dolce and Gabbana leopard print and rose blouse.
This is like pinnacle Dale outfit, isn't it?
This was so me in 40 years time.
It was a proper like power bitch move as well, because like I'm sure at some point she has done some research into what Garrow Sparrow's kind of clothing line is, and it's like she's literally came as the full antithesis of everything that fashion house stands for.
I just love Dale as a power bitch.
I know.
And so she's just dabbing her eyes at the overwhelming emotion of it all. I mean, these two together are such a riot. They literally have the same reaction around each other as I have to, like, I don't know, videos about a blind cat retiring to a country sanctuary run by an aged Floridian couple called Marge and Tom. Like, that's the only thing that's going to get me that level of weepy.
Yeah, there's very few things that can make me that emotional.
And do you know what else gets me?
What?
You know, in Drag Race, when they're doing their makeup and then it will come up about, like, family dynamics or something, they will tell their stories. That gets me.
Oh, my God, it tips me over the edge almost every time. It's always so like sad and so traumatic and things, and I'm literally just, and then I just sit there just like dwelling on how lucky I've been in life, and I'm like, oh no, I just want to look after them.
I got so sad watching that yesterday.
Oh my God, I know, yesterday's was so like emotional. Also, just as an aside from that Drag Race episode, can we discuss the fact that woman changed her name by deed poll to Janet the Planet?
Yeah, and I feel robbed that we didn't get more of her story.
I do as well. Like, it's so unfortunate that obviously she was paired with that Sherry Pie that's been, I was going to say evicted there. Evicted's not the word I'm trying to think.
I believe the term is cancelled.
Yeah.
I love Janet the Planet. I loved when she was like, well, people used to think I was a man, so I just kind of embraced it at one point. And I was just like, yes, love it. She's like an Amazonian.
I was just like enamored by her. I thought she was amazing.
And I loved the Bert and Ernie look. And I was like, this is my dream aesthetic.
Oh my God, I would love to recreate that. That would be the most fun.
If we ever get to the point of doing a live show.
Oh my God, can we?
Can we?
Yeah.
Oh, that would be so. So she puts on the dress, and to me, it looks like something out of Toddlers and Tiaras.
That was exactly the vibe that I got, and was what I wrote down as well. I did think it was very telling, though, that obviously, like, we sort of flash to the women sort of starting to arrive and stuff, and you can see how out of her element Dorinda is, but then Dorinda also refers to it as being like a Disney show.
Oh, that was so shady. I mean, I think also the bedazzled trainers really
oh god, well. The trainers were just atrocious. There was no need for them. If he'd have gone with like a big, like heavy, edgy heel, like high heeled boot, it would have been so much better.
Yeah, I'm glad we agree. It looked like, I don't know, like on Depop, you know, you get those accounts that like bedazzle things.
Oh God, and they're always repulsive.
Or it's more of like a Facebook group thing, mum Facebook group thing where they'll make like satin bows for babies' heads. And they'll bedazzle like a Jack Daniels bottle and stick a light bulb in it and be like, evening lights. That's what I thought of when I saw those trainers.
I did as well. I just thought they were some of the most monstrous, offensive things that I've truly ever seen in my life. And they didn't go with the outfit. They didn't go with the show. In fact, Tinsley's entire look was such a sore thumb in that show.
Yeah, I remembered Garrow being good on Project Runway. Did he win?
I think he did win. Or he came second, maybe?
I think he got pretty far, and yeah, this really surprised me.
Because he showed it like the Project Runway Fashion Week, but I can't remember if he won or not.
I mean, I definitely share Tinsley's sentiments about trainers. Like, I am so used to wearing heels that if I go for flats, my body just can't adjust to it, and I just end up like rolling my ankle and sabotaging myself.
Oh, see, I'm the polar opposite. If somebody tried to ask me to walk that runway in heels, I'd have been a stumbling, weeping mess. It would have been like, you know, when, was it Naomi Campbell when she wore those Vivienne Westwood shoes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it would have been me to a T, but trainers, give me them any day.
So, as I suspected, the Sonia Morgan, oh no, wait, oh no, this is the Garrow Sparrow bit. So the ladies start to congregate in the VIP area. And at this point, Dorita says something about Disney-themed fashion shows. Yes. It was all very shady and very dismissive.
It was, and she said it with that sort of classic Dorinda air of having no idea that what she was saying was offensive. And it was like, you know.
Like, of course she did. And so the show starts and Ramona is shocked and appalled at the designs.
I love when she was like, I mean, it's not my kind of look. And all I could think was, imagine Ramona in one of those like sprayed on catsuit things.
I feel that Ramona would not do well in Berlin.
No, it's not the city for her at all, is it?
So one of the other models that's cast in the show is Amanda Lepore.
Oh, I love Amanda Lepore so much.
Yeah, and so at this point, I started to wonder if Tinsley has been cast as a kind of very ironic pop culture princess.
Yeah, that was kind of exactly what I started to think as well, where it was like, I mean, you can't have her and Amanda Lepore in the same show on an even keel trying to represent the same thing.
Yeah, and that's where I thought, oh, maybe Garrow is being a bit like kitschy with it.
Yeah, and he's kind of like, oh, look, like Real Housewives socialite, but like in my show, what an irony sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably far more accurate than he thought that she was very on brand for him.
Yeah, because the Real Housewives do occupy that space in popular culture where they are, I suppose, generally like well-to-do, you know, rich, privileged women, but they're also kind of the epitome of bad taste.
Exactly, yeah, and they kind of ride that weird wave between, they've kind of become this ironic, slightly tacky, like pop culture figure that works so well in that sort of camp realm.
And I always wonder about my own relationship with the Real Housewives franchise, because I tell myself it's ironic because, you know, the way that I analyze the episodes or the way the cultural touch points that I pick up on are not necessarily surface level. But then actually, if I think about it, like, no, I do have like a genuine love of these women and the world that they inhabit and a genuine emotional investment in it. So am I really being that ironic about it? I don't think I am, if I'm myself.
Exactly the same, where it's like, I think I started watching it just as like, I think it was more of like an accident kind of thing. And I think when I started watching it, it was kind of like a car crash where you can't look away from it, but you know that it's bad. And I think just over the years, I don't know if it's kind of like Stockholm syndrome, but like I've become very protective of like people who think it's just mindless trash. Like, so like anybody that's just like, oh, it's just shit. Like it's just screaming women, I'm just like, no, let me give you a full philosophical breakdown of why you're incorrect about that.
But then at the same time, you've got this full kind of philosophical paradigm, you know, through which you interpret the episodes. But also it's like, oh my God, I'm so happy Stassi's getting married. So there is actually that genuine...
Yeah, like a genuine affinity for them as well.
So the women are all talking about Tinsley in the show, and they're saying that Tinsley is like got her spark back. So I can only assume that when Brittany lost her spark in season six of Vanderpump Rules, so has Tinsley regained it?
Yeah, she must have just found it somewhere in that sort of vacuous void that they both seem to occupy of being forgettable and sweet at the same time.
In a Hooters tote bag. So then we head to the Pamela Roland show and we get the best Chiron ever. So Luann literally just goes backstage to sneak a blow dry.
That little scrawling banner under the hairdresser.
Hairdresser for models.
For the models actually in the show.
I had a lot of respect for it.
I mean, did she just wander back? I mean, I don't imagine she was invited back there.
Well, she seemed to just sort of be in amongst it all and then, you know, just catered someone that didn't look particularly busy.
Just got him on hand for a quick blow dry.
I mean, we actually told our students on fashion communication to crash New York Fashion Week if they could, because they went on a field trip to New York. So I was low-key keeping an eye out. My students in the background. Having said that, they all know that I'm a massive Real Housewives fan, so I think if any of them would have managed to sneak into the filming, I would have heard of it.
Oh yeah, you absolutely would have. You can't keep that kind of thing to yourself.
So backstage at Pamela Roland, there's a kind of stressful scene where they're all posing for photo ops and Ramona is just being so rude.
I just found this so hard to watch.
She's thrusting her iPhone into the hands of a very disoriented looking ginger man in a wrestling rack.
And I just love the audacity of like the photographer actually being there. And she's like, no, I want these taken on my low budget iPhone rather than your high quality DSLR camera.
Ramona is the kind of person who's just been successful for so long and she's just forgotten how to act like a normal human.
Yeah, it's like she can't even fathom the idea that somebody might say no to her or might not want to do the things that she thinks a good idea.
Yeah, I would hate this. I can't stand that kind of barging in the way mentality. I think it's also like it's an American thing sometimes.
Yeah, because the British are kind of the overly polite where if somebody was doing that, nobody would say anything. There would just be a lot of sort of loud tutting and huffing and kind of like...
Yeah, I would, like, if this was me and I was watching this, I would just like glare into the back of her head, but if she looked at me, I just look normal.
Yeah.
You'd do like a disapproving eye roll, but only if you knew that they weren't going to see it at any cost.
Yeah, like if there was no chance at all that they were going to turn around.
So at the show, the seats all have little Madame Paulette stain kits.
Right.
Do you have something to say to that, Faith?
No, let's move on.
So Ramona mentions that Tinsley stained her bedsheets and then strategically placed a Hamptons lifestyle magazine over it to hide it, and also didn't even bother to clear away the rest of her garbage.
So from the shots that we can see when they obviously do the flashback, like, it doesn't look like it's in that bad of a state, but I also just don't understand why Tinsley just placed that magazine so tenderly over the stain. Like, if you know there's a stain on it, why not just strip the bedding and put it in a ball and be like, oh, I've taken your bed sheets off these, you can just wash them easier.
Yeah, and I mean, come on, that's going to come out with a bleach solution.
And I mean, it looked like the most microscopic bit of pasta sauce. Like, you can get that shit out. And let's face it, Ramona's not getting anything out by herself. She has help. There is not a cat in hell's chance that she's doing her own laundry after that weekend.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I do think, though, Tinsley, you can tell that she lives in a hotel most of the time, because to leave glasses and bottles and stuff lying around, that would really piss me off.
Yeah, same. I'd find that just like too rude to even comprehend. You can tell she's so used to, like, she comes back from wherever she's been and like the maid's been in and done her hotel apartment and cleaned it for her.
Oh, can you imagine?
Oh, honestly, the dream.
So then we get, I think, the most excellent juxtaposition of people at this fashion show. We have a shot of Nikki Hilton Rothschild, and then we have Melissa Gorga. So my van man that does a lot of my work for Trendlister when I'm like moving around the country doing sales actually works also for the Rothschilds.
Are you kidding?
I'm not. So it's got special kind of insurance where he can transport like super expensive artwork.
Oh my God.
So done work for like the Saudi royal family and stuff. And this is a nice thing. So he works for, I mean, it's some branch of the Rothschilds family and they live like down south on some big estate. And apparently they're really nice to him. Like they're lovely people.
Oh my God.
So I love that. And then I kept being like, so do they have any eligible sons? But apparently I have to wait about 10 years for them to be legal. Which is like, I can do that for a Rothschild.
That time, it's like mid-30s, perfect time to settle down with a Rothschild.
But then also it reminded me of last time we were down in London, like he'll always say like, oh, do you want to come and get a pint? And like generally I'm staying with another friend in London, so I tend to be either in Brixton or in Camden, so he normally stays quite central. So I was like, oh no, don't worry, like I've got to kind of travel across town and stuff. So he went off and he went and had a night out, and then the next morning he comes and he helps me set up on the day of the show.
Oh, that's so nice.
Oh, he's amazing. So everyone also thinks that we're like a married couple a lot of the time, which is really funny. Just because he's like, well, I think he's in his mid-40s, but I don't actually know. So he went out, and then the next day I was like, oh, how was your night out? He went, yeah, it was good. I went out in Brixton. So he's got a friend that has a big vintage, like mid-century furniture showroom out in East London. And he was like, yeah. So we went out and we met up with this girl who's really into vintage furniture, and she does like pop music as well.
Right.
All right. Oh, that's cool. And he was like, yeah, I had never heard of her, but like maybe you have. Her stage name is Dua Lipa. And I was like, excuse me? And he was like, yeah, she's really into collecting vintage furniture, so she knows my friend. So we all went out. And I was like, okay, my van man lives truly a way more glamorous jet set life than I.
I will never be over that story.
And then after that, I was like, okay, next time, like, I'm coming out.
Back just off whatever friend it is that you're staying with.
He was literally like, she's a lovely girl, you know, very pretty, very pretty. Yeah, stage name Dua Lipa. I was just like, for the love of God. So yeah, apparently she's super into mid-century furniture. There you go.
That was good to know.
So
incredible.
So yeah, that was all stemming from the Rothschild connection. So Ramona at this Pamela Rolland show, having just decried the Gary Sparrow show as being like a bit much, is literally wearing skin tight leather with some kind of, I couldn't tell if it was biker inspired or maybe like cowboy inspired detailing down the front.
I know, I couldn't quite figure it out either. It didn't feel very Ramona though. It felt like Ramona trying to do fashion.
Yeah, she was trying to be edgy.
Yeah. In that kind of middle-aged woman's way of thinking. Edgy means leather. Put leather pants on.
Oh, just like those gold trousers, of which we will not speak.
They've been condemned forever.
And Sonia basically spends the entire show dictating into her iPhone.
Which I literally, so I, it's very rare that I will agree with Ramona, but I was dying.
Yeah, she was rightfully mortified.
I know, like, can you imagine though? Like, I would, like, give up my left arm to be front row of a fashion show. And the fact that Sonia literally never even looked up once and was just muttering away into her iPhone was, like, too much.
Yeah, it was infuriating to watch.
It was. And the fact that she was so central, and obviously the camera crew was there, like, specifically recording them, which obviously would have drawn extra attention to them.
Oh, yeah, I forget about that.
Yeah.
I actually forget that there are camera crews involved in this a lot of the time. Yeah. It was, you know, on Jersey when they kind of broke the fourth wall when Teresa had that meltdown.
Oh, my God, yes.
It was kind of crazy to see, like, how close the cameras are at points and how many of them there are.
I know. I always wonder about this as well, because obviously they do quite a good job of going on like there's nothing there. But some of the close-up shots and stuff, I think, how close is this person to the camera?
Yeah, especially when they're doing, like, stuff in the bedroom or, yeah.
Yeah, or, like, even just, like, dinner scenes, like, when they're, like, close-up shots of, like, a couple of them eating dinner and stuff, and it's like, is there literally just somebody, like, up in your face with this giant camera?
I remember that guy that I was seeing earlier this year had to, like, carry his camera around because he, like, shot a lot of his own stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I never realized that TV journalists basically have to do everything. So they write the voiceover, they record the voiceover, they shoot a lot of their own footage.
Oh my God.
Set up the interview. So it's quite impressive. It's like a cool job.
Yeah.
But once he was coming into my apartment and he had this big, like, handheld camera with him because he didn't want to leave it in the car. And we passed someone on the staircase and I was like, this looks so bad. Just like young girl getting followed by older man with
a camera.
Into the basement we go.
Oh my God.
So now we cut to the lunch scene where they're all congregating post fashion show, and we learn that Ramona has been known to eat 2 dozen oysters in one occasion.
I find this such a monstrous concept.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on oysters?
I can't eat them. So I've tried, and I did that thing where I got it as far as into my mouth, and then, you know, when you just think too heavily about what it is, and I sort of got stuck in this weird limbo of, like, I couldn't quite swallow it, but also wasn't bad managed enough to spit it out, and in the end was sort of, like, half choking, swallowed it, and was just like, never again.
Okay, so definitely not one for ordering. No.
Certainly not 2 dozen just for myself either.
I like oysters. I will happily eat them. I do think that it's truly insane to be eating, like, dozens at a time.
I find that so, so wild. And also the montage of, well, not even montage, but just that scene of her eating them was really enough to put me off ever trying them again.
It's the fact that she's so sexual about it. It's like, did Dorinda say it was almost pornographic to watch? Yeah.
And the noises and the, oh, no, no, no.
So Sonia starts to get in a complete tizzy, as my mum would say, about the show, and says that she now has to leave things to sort out. And Ramona's just like, it's not a huge show, Sonia. It's not.
No. And, like, the bluntness of it is just, like, so glaringly obvious to everybody. And it's like, we all know that this isn't going to be, like, a New York Fashion Week show. We all know it. But I also feel quite bad for Sonia because she's obviously, like, super proud of it.
Yeah, I mean, she goes to sit at another table to calm down and do emails. I mean, you can kind of tell that what Ramona said hasn't quite landed.
Yeah, and I think with a lot of the things that Ramona says to Sonia, I think Sonia just doesn't even, like, absorb the information from them because she's so used to Ramona's, like, quick tongue and, like, acidness about things.
Oh, yeah, she's built up a tolerance over many years.
Yeah, so nothing that she says even actually goes in. Like, the Charlie Brown thing of just, like, every time Ramona speaks to Sonia, all Sonia hears is just, like, wah, 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 wah.
With Pingu noises.
Yeah.
So Leah then shows up in a lace body and some low-waisted jeans. Honestly, she's one of the only people I've ever seen looking good in, like, a low-waisted jean.
There is nobody on this planet that can pull them off except Leah. Like, how did she manage to stop that from, A, looking really, like, dated and early noughties throwback? And B, how did she manage to make it look flattering?
Yeah, and it didn't even look tacky.
No, like, she managed to pull it off in a way that didn't even seem, like, tongue-in-cheek.
Leah reveals that her mum doesn't want to talk to her because she started drinking again.
Oh, I really did feel for it. Like, it must be really hard because obviously to her mind, she's just like, well, I'm fine now. I'm not going to go off the rails. But it must be really hard not having a family like trust your decisions and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I also think you can't really blame the mum. Like, if they've gone through, you know, it sounds like it was such an extreme situation in childhood that it's hard to get over that. And I think 9 years sober is a long time.
I agree. And like, I do totally understand her mum's perspective. I just think it just must be hard, like, sort of feeling like you can make this decision, but other people not trusting your judgment.
Yeah. And then the fact that the fact that Tinsley then tries to kind of comfort her by telling the story of her and Dale arguing over her curly hairdo. This was like the strangest form of logic.
It was so bizarre, like trying to sort of identify with her and make it seem like she wasn't alone with this story. And it was like, 12 years of sobriety, curly hair this morning.
But this just goes to show you Tinsley's logic and how removed from reality she is, but also how incapable she is of, like, true empathy. So I don't mean that from the sense of, you know, being a nice person or an understanding person, because I think Tinsley actually is. I don't think she's a particularly venomous.
No, I don't either.
But I think she is completely incapable of putting things into perspective for other people and understanding other people's life experiences that differ slightly from her own.
Absolutely. And like, the fact that she thinks those two things are even comparable just shows that she's got very little real grasp of reality. Like,
Dorinda is just fully over it, and she minds sweeping her brains out with knives, which I did enjoy.
I did enjoy that as well. And you could see Tinsley almost all it looked at her as if she couldn't understand why it seemed like such a joke to, like, Dorinda and Leah. And it was like, you're literally talking about your hair being curled.
Yeah, it's so Tinsley's acting like it's some kind of microaggression.
Yeah. I just loved in that scene as well, though, like, Leah's really vacant sort of half smile at Tinsley as Tinsley was telling the story. Like, the way she just kind of stared across the table at her with that sort of, like blank expression of, like, you really think this is the same, don't you?
Yeah, she really does. She really does. She's not doing it to kind of, she genuinely thinks that Leah's going to be like, oh my God, yeah, I'm so sorry for you.
Yeah, like, I'm so glad you understand.
So then we go to, well, what I hope is the Married to the Mob office.
I think it is. I think it must be.
God, it was so chic.
Wasn't it? It was honestly everything that I probably would have expected from Leah.
And so Rob, her baby daddy, comes by.
Who is not what I expected, really.
No, but he, I, mm.
Yeah.
But also, I think I'm just generally very horny for, like, their strong relationship as parents, you know, their mutual respect and their mutual concern.
Their relationship is just so healthy and so nice to see. And I kind of like that they showed that interaction, because it kind of shows that it's not just like a surface level of, like, politeness, but, like, obviously that he still really cares about her and is still really close with her family and that sort of thing. So I thought that was nice.
The, like, clarity of the communication really turned me on.
Yeah. I know, it was like so, like, there was no, like, over emotional, like, bitchiness behind anything. It was just so, like, concise, to the point, like, here's how I'm feeling. Well, here's how I'm feeling. Well, I think that's valid. I think that's valid too. Let's move on.
Oh, I just, this is, men need to be taking notes. Like, this is what I want from you. Like, it's not that difficult.
Yeah.
Take notes. And you it's know, that study, thing of, like, observe and replicate.
Yeah. And I think it is that thing of, like, it's just, like, obvious that it's not, like, you don't have to agree to have a healthy and respectful discussion. And I think that was, like, such a perfect example of it, because it was, like, they were sort of disagreeing and, like, obviously, he was saying that he didn't think she was making the right decision, and she was saying that, you know, well, it's my decision to make. And both are really, really valid points, but at no point was either, like, accusatory or, like, bitter about it.
Completely. I kind of hope that we get to see a bit more of them just as parents.
I do as well. It makes me like their family dynamic.
Yeah, I'm very interested in it. I mean, God help me if I ever have a child, like I would hope that if things wouldn't work out, that I'd have chosen someone that would be like this.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's kind of a nice thing to want as well. Like, I always have this thing as well where I always think, like, it sounds really sort of catastrophic and what have you, but I always just think, oh, if we were to ever, for example, if, like, me and Greg were to ever, like, get married and then get divorced or what have you, I was like, oh, I feel like even then it would be a really amicable, nice, healthy thing. Like, I never want to be in a position where I think it would just be, like, poisonous and disastrous.
I think that, I mean, I'm really good friends with my most recent ex, Lewis. Actually, he'd really like to come on the show at some point.
Get him on. I'm so excited.
I think we should do that because he's an engineer and he's just, I think he'd bring like a lot of interesting perspectives to it.
I'm so about this idea.
But, you know, we ended up breaking up because really we were friends before we were anything else. And so, you know, just because we broke up, it didn't mean that we stopped being friends. And there was, yes. I know he never would have done anything to hurt me. I would have never done anything behind his back. So it's okay that it didn't work in that way. And like, that's why I don't think it's strange that we're still friends. But I think a lot of people think that's quite odd.
I agree. And so it's weird. Like apart from one of my exes, I don't really have like any ill feeling towards any of mine. And I could quite happily have maintained a friendship like to this day. But also I think a lot of them were very immature in it because I was always the one that broke up with them. Purely just because I get to a point where if I'm not feeling it, I'm not really one to irk it out. I'm just like, right, that's it, it's done. Like,
yeah, I think that's healthy.
I do as well because I think the more you drag it on, the more like difficult and unfair it is for everybody. So I'm very much just sort of cut and dry kind of thing, but I would have liked to maintain a friendship with a lot of them, but obviously it's got to be a two-way thing, which I think is a shame.
Yeah, I think I always think it's a bit of a red flag when someone is on bad terms with all of their exes. I think everyone has like maybe one or two people where things have gone sour and that's pretty normal. But if a guy says to me like, oh no, like I don't speak to any of them, or no, like things didn't end well for basically all of their past relationships, that to me is a bit of like it's not a good sign.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of think it's that like it's the same as when guys like, oh, all my exes are psychos, and it's like, well, the common denominator is you here. So
I mean, all of mine are, but no. Yeah. Yeah, it's very much like the othering of that person,
yeah,
to suit your situation.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, I was very into this whole scene.
Yeah, I liked it. I like Rob. I like Leah and Rob as a team. As
I do as well.
So now we go to Dorinda, and Dorinda is upset with John for going out without her, and she's confiding in her like Essex boy assistant. So we find out that John's been choosing to go out schmoozing over staying in with her.
Which I kind of like, at first I was like, oh, that just seems a bit like, if he wants to go out and you don't want to go out, like, why are you stopping him going out? But the more she sort of talked about it, like, I did understand a little bit what she was saying of that, like, I feel like I just don't know where he is, and like other people know where he is more than I do. And I was like, I can understand that, because I'd be pissed off if like every time I didn't want to do something, Greg was just like, oh, right, well, see you later, off I go. Like,
I think that it was more about the fact that he was obviously not telling her where he was going, and then other people were then saying, oh, we've just seen John. I don't think it was actually the fact that he's going out.
Yeah.
It's that he wasn't being clear with her of...
Yeah, and because I mean, we even see a bit of it like in action at Sonia's show afterwards, which is like when she was just like, oh, I literally didn't know he was going to be here.
Yeah, that's like, odd. Like, you've been going on for 7 years.
Yeah, I find that so bizarre.
So we finally get to the Sonia Morgan fashion show. Lou is in San Diego, we learn, but she gets a little tour via FaceTime,
which Sonia very abruptly ends when she notices the orchids.
Yeah, Sonia at this point, excuse me, is just fully melting down, and she's looking at various people milling around who all seem completely unclear about what their brief is.
Everyone's just clutching these pieces of paper and then getting screamed at for clutching said pieces of paper.
And so we go to Leah and Tinsley in the back of the cab, and Leah provides full screenshots showing that she sent some of the dresses that she liked.
Which all looked like, I was impressed that Leah had managed to find dresses that would have suited her from Sonia's collection.
Yeah, and this is why it's really cheeky that Sonia tries to pass it off in a testimonial. It's like, well, Leah wouldn't want to wear any of my dresses. It's like, yeah, we saw her texting you saying, yes, these are my options, you know.
These are what I'd like to wear.
And I obviously tweeted that if Sonia's really giving us cashmere tracksuits under $200, like, we should be completely grateful for that, because that is fantastic. That is a public service that is needed. But I think what really got me was the combination of the tracksuit, the sunglasses, and the hat. That was what was offensive.
Oh my God, the hat was bad enough. And then when she pulled out those sunglasses, I mean, they were terrible even on their own, like, much less with that.
The sunglasses were such an Alibaba moment. What? Oh no, AliExpress. And then we cut to a testimonial with Ramona, where she's basically like, I support Sonia, whatever she wants to do, at the same time completely tearing down her entire business and explaining she's just flogging wholesale merchandise.
Oh, and I mean, I thought that was just such a great representation, really, of Ramona and Ramona. Well, Ramona. But I thought that was just so, like, indicative of their entire relationship, where it's just like, yeah, I think what she's doing is crap, and it's this, and it's that, and it's, oh, she's only really, like, she's not even designing things. And, oh, but I support her with everything that she does.
I support women.
Yeah.
So Leah is wearing a mugshot Lil' Kim bodycon dress with a neon green YSL bag.
Adored everything about this look. That fucking dress is incredible.
It's great. So it's actually a take, or like an imitation. Vivian Tam did a Chairman Mao dress, which was the same. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I think I do. And actually, I think Dorinda mentioned it, didn't she?
Yeah, so she must have had the skirt from that collection.
Yes.
Because I think when I saw people on Twitter, they were like, Chairman Mao, like, that's a bit of a weird jump. But I think that's what she was getting at.
Yeah, because I had completely forgotten about that at first. And when Dorinda was saying about, like, oh, I had a skirt that had Chairman Mao on, that was a bit like that. And I was like, are you comparing the two? And then I remembered the actual collection. I was like, oh, yeah, that makes more sense.
But then I did like it when she was like, so I get a little, like, I get a little gangster thing, I get a little gangster vibe. It's like, yeah, Chairman Mao, the original gangster.
Yeah. Utterly comparable with Lil' Kim.
Oh, Lil' Kim, have you seen what she's done?
Not recently, no.
Take a look just now on Google.
Oh, goodness me.
Been Lil' Kim before and after. Oh, and get it up as well. It's really, really sad.
Oh, she ruined herself. No.
Yes.
No. Oh my God.
It's like a Jocelyn Wildenstein moment.
She reminds me of, did you ever watch The Real Housewives of Miami?
Mama Elsa.
Yeah. Oh, she died recently as well, which is really sad.
I know, but I was amazed that she made it this far.
I was as well.
Because Housewives of Miami, I think, was like 2011 or something.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
And she was already, you know, pretty old.
Yeah. But yeah, that's so sad. I can't believe she looks like that now. Ugh.
It's a good job she's been immortalized in the form of this dress.
Yeah. I would buy the fuck out of this dress, though. I think it's so good.
Oh, and I mean, the fact that Leah looks so good in something that's essentially just a bodycon tube of fabric.
I know. I mean, it's really a testament. And paired with that green bag was just like perfection.
That was a stroke of genius.
It was. It really was.
So Leah pulls out the athleisure wear from the bag. And the ladies are all equally horrified by it.
Which I did love. I did enjoy that everybody was also very on the same page with this.
Do you think that Sonia was doing this as a sly dig?
I don't think she was being deliberately shitty. I don't think it's in, like, Sonia's mental capacity to think things through this far. But I also do think she was being thoughtless.
I don't know. I think she was doing it to be a bit...
Yeah, a bit snotty.
And then, so anyway, we get to the fashion show, and I'm not going to lie, I was genuinely surprised in a pleasant way at some of the looks being shown. Not all of them, but some of them.
I agree. Although, can we just for a minute discuss the fact that it does look like it's being held in a conference room?
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely, it's what I would call a presentation as opposed to a fashion show.
Yeah. I mean, there was literally cabinets on the walls that had, like, laptops and things in.
I didn't see that. I kept stopping and starting with this episode, so it took me about 4 hours all in all to actually watch it, just because I was a bit hungover from my intense Zooming session the night before. So
incredible. Completely understandable.
I think I was not taking in some of the details, but like, I love the leather pants with the Chanel style jacket. I thought it looked great in that.
I was just about to say, I was thinking Leah would have looked phenomenal in that.
And I also loved, there was like a snakeskin belted trench that was really nice.
Yes. So they were incredible. And then we had the weird array of like early noughties, kind of early J-Lo vibe.
Yes. So I've literally written, I don't like that grey faux fur coat. Was that the one that you were talking about? That kind of has the fur in panels as well.
Yeah. And it was just so bad. And it was very like... early like noughties music video, usually where they've kind of got it on and like they're in the rain or something like that.
With satin cargo pants.
Yeah. And one of those little fur Russian hats.
Yeah, that I can totally see where you're coming from with
yeah.
And then I also didn't like what Sonia was wearing. Like, to me, it looked like, you know how we were talking about how they have that signature satin cocktail dress?
Yes.
It was like that had bred with like a taxidermy crow to create some kind of slightly gothic hybrid. And like, I just didn't quite feel like it worked.
No, and it didn't suit her and it didn't suit the line. And it was just, it was not good.
And of course...
I was going to say, sorry, I did find it so awkward as well that it was in silence and there was no, like, opening of the show or anything.
Oh, like, yeah.
The models just started to walk out and I was, like, cringing and dying because it was so, like, uncomfortable to watch, like, and just hear the general chatter of people around and, oh, no.
Yeah, and, like, the lighting was very, there was no change in lighting either to indicate that something was going to happen, so it was just kind of all in broad daylight.
And then they did, like, the closing of the show walk by the bar. Like, there was literally that scene where it was, like, Sonia was walking with them. And they were just, like, walking down the side of the bar. And I was like, where is this place?
And she got someone specifically to scout this location. Like,
only job.
So the ladies congregate after the show. And, of course, Sonia doesn't know the difference between Beyonce and Lil' Kim. She's like, who is that? Is that Beyonce?
Yeah. And I did love Leah's just like, really, really? Like,
yeah, Leah completely calls her on her bullshit here. She says, I think you're passive aggressive and I think you're still mad at me from the Hamptons. And Sonia at this point can barely conceal her smirk.
I know. She's got like glee all over her face.
And Sonia kind of cuts away and she's like, well, you know, I didn't think Leah would like any of my dresses anyway. Dresses are very fancy. And she's basically saying that Leah isn't.
Yeah, Leah's not fancy enough, the Sonia Morgan line.
So this is just pure, the Sonia Morgan line where everything is under $200. So again, I just felt like this was pure classism.
100%.
But then
I love that Sonia considered that streetwear, like, it literally looked like a cashmere prison suit.
I mean, I am actually going to see if I can buy it.
Oh, 100%. But it's very much for indoors.
Yeah, I mean, or for travel.
Yeah, yes. It would be a good, like, airplane outfit.
Yeah, I've been looking for a black cashmere tracksuit for so long, but I can't find anything under, like, £800.
Oh, if you can find a Sonia Morgan one, that would truly be incredible.
Yeah, because I want a wide leg as well. I don't like slim fit for that kind of
thing.
So I do love that Sonia then decides to put this out on and kind of parade around. And by the end of it, they're just like lolling about it.
I know. And it's like such a classic thing. And like Leah says, like, you just can't be mad at her. Like, you cannot be mad at, even when she was going like, well, that was in L and it was streetwear. And then she like asked for it back to put it on. I was like, I gave you in a nice bag. The receipts that Leah has of that nice bag is like a grease stained brown paper bag with a rip in it.
did she not say that it was a De Gournay bag?
I think she did.
Which is a wallpaper brand. Which is just weird in and of itself. And it would make sense because De Gournay is very like old world French style wallpaper.
Yeah.
So it does fit with Sonia. But let me tell you, that was not a De Gournay.
It was not.
But the thing that I love about Sonia is she is so willing to make a tit of herself, which is such an underrated quality in people. And I'm like, Leah, there's a lot that I would overlook for that in a person.
100%. And I just love the fact that she just went and got naked in the kitchen and there was that guy there just sipping on his drink, who I think was waitstaff, just staring like open-eyed at her.
Sonia will never miss an opportunity to whip her clothes off in public.
And I just love that for her. I thought it was fantastic. And yeah, the fact that she was just trotting around barefoot as well.
The whole thing just descended into her.
I think it was a perfect end to her fashion show, to be fair.
It was, yeah, it was aligned with the brand values.
Very much so.
So, yeah, I mean, it was a showcase. You know, I mean, okay, don't tell me that there were serious retailers there that she was going to enter into business discussions with, you know.
It absolutely wasn't. Like, let's be clear. This was during New York Fashion Week. This wasn't at New York Fashion Week.
No, this was like a fringe event. Fashion Scout, Fashion Festival, you know.
Yeah.
£50 to go to some fashion shows.
100%. And I just love that she was just like, yeah, we're showing at New York Fashion Week. And it's like, no, you are not.
Yeah, it's like I could go to New York at the time of Fashion Week, mount an event, and be like, I'm showing at New York Fashion Week, just because it happened to fall within those dates.
Yeah, exactly. Just because you happen to be in the city at the same time.
I might do that.
I think you should, honestly. I'll be a little assistant. We can.
So then we get the next week preview.
I can't believe that Jacques is back.
Jacques is back.
And also trying to convince Luan to drink.
Now, okay, I have to mount a European defence here. This to me, it's very, very Euro, I think, to have this response.
Yeah.
Be like, well, it's okay, you can have one, you know. I think especially, like, French mentality, they will indulge themselves in small things. They're all horrified by English and, like, American binge drinking culture.
Yeah.
They will happily have, like, a big glass of wine with their working lunch. But I think because they indulge more frequently, but to a lower degree, they don't necessarily understand as much, like, the abundance with which other people do it as a generalization.
Yeah, and the kind of compulsion to keep drinking.
Yeah, so I think in his mind he's like, well, no, you just have one, you know, it's okay. And like, that is obviously so insensitive knowing the context, but I can see his rationale behind it.
Yeah, no, I do. I think in that, yeah, now that you said that as well, like, it does make a lot more sense. I think it was just one of those things where it was like, oh, no, Jacques. Like,
isn't it kind of cute, though, that they're still in touch? And
I thought that as well. Like, I thought it was really, really nice.
I would like them to maybe be back together. I don't know. Luan needs to be with a European man.
I do as well. She can't have an American guy.
No, I think it speaks to her soul to be with some continental.
I agree. And like, I can't imagine her having that much in common with like a kind of, especially like a brash, like New York kind of guy as well.
Yeah, she wouldn't go for like a Harry Dupin.
No.
Even Tom had his Italian heritage.
Yeah, he had at least a little bit of something, something going for him.
No, Luan's got to be, I think, with a Frenchman. I think that's the only cultural fit that makes sense.
I agree wholeheartedly. I'd love that for her as well. I do think her and Jack were a perfect perfect match, to be fair. And it would be nice if they got back together. Like, and it was never really clear on why they broke up.
I think there was infidelity, but I think it was on both of their parts, but I'm not sure. Have to do some digging.
Yeah, let's do some research. But yeah, I'd be very into that as a theme for this week's next week's episode.
Yeah, I thought he was looking cute, you know. Little salt and pepper in the hair.
I know, he's aged well.
Yeah.
Like French man.
He's French, of course, yeah.
But yeah, I think it's next week, isn't it, where she starts to go off the rails a little bit with her drinking?
Yeah, so
we had that bit where
in the drink,
yeah, she's like snatches the drink and Ramona's like, no sweetie, that's vodka, and she's just like that defiant chugging of it. So I'm intrigued to see what the episode holds and why it is that now is when she's starting to really drink again.
The look that she gave Ramona is the look that a cat gives you as it pushes something off the table, isn't it? It's the exact same energy.
Defiant, I'm gonna be an arsehole and you can't stop me kind of expression.
Yeah, I'm interested to see the context of it as well.
I am as well. Well, I cannot wait for that.
I hope she's gonna be okay.
I do as well. I kind of Lou's really grown on me.
I mean she's insane. I'm actually trying to, so I've decided that for the rest of lockdown I'm probably not going to buy in any more wine. When I had wine in the house, you know, you have like one or two with dinner and you can just, you end up drinking a lot more without really realizing.
So yeah,
when I have spirits I'm like a lot more aware of what I'm having, plus you don't get the headache. So now I'm just sticking to like one G&T around 5 or 6 o'clock, and then I seem to be better at like moderating that for myself because no one's around me either. I'm by myself. So like,
yeah,
if I'm left unchecked, I just drink what I have in the house.
Yeah. And I do think it's harder with spirits to overdrink because you have to go through the whole, like you have to pour out a measure of it and then you have to get your mixer and you have to get your ice and you have to do all this. Whereas like wine, it's so easy just to put the bottle on the table in front of you, unscrew it and just keep pouring it in and topping it up.
Yeah, and I don't know why it feels so much worse to look at a wine bottle and to have drank, you know, half of it,
mm-hmm.
or to look at a spirit bottle, you know, because the quantities just go down that much slower.
Yeah,
you just feel a bit better about it. So I'm going to try and do that, and I'm going to try and like just have maybe one drink a day.
I believe in you.
Thank you. Now I just need my Jacques.
That can be a new project for lockdown.
Truly just want to be held.
That's a lockdown vibe if I've ever heard one.
Okay. I will play us out with a bit more of Playboy Bunny.
What a treat.
Are you ready?
So ready.
Let's do this. Show and I gotta go and she wanna know the pain of my story is all on the low. Really, how long is the suit in the stone? I'm back on my ground, my pleasure is time. How many mountains in life will I climb? It's all in the mind. Reality thoughts are aligned. Let's go. You ain't really ready for the drop yet. 737 first class, yeah, I'm obsessed. JK837 on my way to the bus stop. I'm over to New Orleans and I'm upset. Gotta click steady, gonna take my spot. Yeah, 737 first class, no objects. Now I got her in the penthouse getting undressed. Now I think she's the one. Let's go.